radical idea. We'll cross the streams.
Excuse me, Egon. You said crossing the streams was bad.
Cross the streams.
Hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Crossing Streams, your weekly and sometimes twice weekly television streaming podcast out of San Diego, California. Craig Elston back with you. Episode number 145 of the official Crossing Streams podcast. I hope that you had an opportunity to catch our Succession podcast, Full Effing Beast, which is airing now also in this feed. So if you're new to the podcast because you checked us out for Succession, I welcome you in. We are here today to talk about Ted Lasso. We are here to break down season two, to go through the finale, to learn our lessons from the season as a whole. And joining me once again, she is my official Ted Lasso correspondent. When she moved to Tennessee, we considered it relegation. She considered it promotion. It's Marissa Cowley. Yes. Welcome back, Marissa.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I always look forward to chatting about Ted Lasso, but especially with you, because there's a lot of different storylines and things that we can dissect in this series. And, you know, there's not enough chats going on right now. I have a few going on right now with and about Ted Lasso. So I'm really excited.
Well, if you've missed it before, Marissa and I have gathered a couple other times. So if you are somebody maybe who you just clicked on this, but you're very early in Ted Lasso, Marissa and I talked about the first two episodes, a few episodes back in your feed. And then about a month ago, we had a mid-season check-in. A month or so ago, we had a mid-season check-in. So you can go back. You can find those episodes all labeled in the Crossing Streams feed if you want to get the full experience. This will be a podcast about the season in total. So we're going to spoil things. If you have not finished the season finale in particular of Ted Lasso, listen, you're going to learn plot points here.
And why haven't you, by the way?
Also, like, come on, this is a Ted Lasso podcast, you know. Yeah, it just seems weird. Maybe it autoplayed. Maybe you're in the car. Maybe it autoplayed. Maybe you're busy.
Right.
But regardless of that, definitely be caught up to your level of satisfaction or your willingness to be spoiled as we move forward here, because we're not just going to talk about the season finale episode 12, but we're going to look at the season as a whole. And that's one thing just kind of to start off and note, Marissa, is that the show order went up from 10 episodes to 12 episodes. And as such, I think you did wind up, when you kind of look at the season as a whole in hindsight, you wind up with two very specific bottle episodes that I wonder if those were 11 and 12 in hindsight. And by that, I'm referring to the Christmas episode and to Coach Beard After Hours, you know, the mm-hmm. Coach Beard all night episode. Both of those are kind of just like dropped in to the overall arc of the season.
Right. Yeah. I mean, who's to know what the conversation was like when when they first started out. And I remember, I think we talked about this on the last podcast, that they said that they had intended to release the first three episodes of this season together. And I don't know if I didn't see anything else about them releasing it in threes, you know, each time. But that is interesting to how the season ended up with four different threes, so to say, you know, with 12 episodes. So I imagine maybe that was the original goal, but it's really interesting how they actually laid it out for us.
And I think their distribution pattern changed a little bit of the discussion pattern around Ted Lasso this year as well. Mm-hmm. But that's maybe a topic for a little bit later in the pod. I thought we could just start with some kind of general themes, top line thoughts, you know, as I like to do. Mm-hmm. But I'd open the floor to you first, Marissa. Just once you're done with the whole thing, 12 episodes, rearview mirror, how do you feel now about season two of Ted Lasso?
Oh, man. When is season three start? Like, that's basically my feeling. I really got into the characters, obviously, the first season. And then the second season, it was interesting. We talked about this last time about how each episode had focused on one character or their story of that character. So you dive deep into that character. And then, you know, there were some times where like I felt like they weren't addressing certain issues, and we'll talk about that. But like, so at the end, you know, when it, you know, it all comes together, I'm just like, okay, I need more. Like, I want to know more about Nate. I want to know more about Roy. I want to know more about Keeley, like all of this. So I think from a production standpoint, really good, because people are wanting more. And now I have to wait probably, I don't know, a year for the next season. I don't know when that's going to come out. But it's definitely a different feeling from the end of season one. Like, the end of season one was like, yay, soccer, people are talking about it. And now it's like, okay, well, this is deep, and this person has this issue, and I don't like that person, but why don't I like that person? So yeah, it's definitely transitioned a lot in terms of the storylines and feelings around it. It's not like a feel good show, but not in that way that you would consider a funny comedy, so to say.
Yeah. You know, for me, I think, and it's kind of an overarching feeling that I'd like to explore and kind of pick apart as we continue here. Mm-hmm. I feel like of all the shows we cover on Crossing Streams, that Ted Lasso is probably the show, the biggest example of a show that was thrust into a spotlight that it probably didn't anticipate. So, mm-hmm. I mean, when this show comes out on Apple TV Plus, it's a comedy as part of the first year rollout of a new platform based on a commercial, commercial, mm-hmm. a sketch that was part of a marketing promotion campaign for the EPL on mm-hmm. NBC. Mm-hmm. You know, while Jason Sudeikis was under NBC contract, you know, for SNL. So you've got really a very shallow, right, idea, a sketch. Then you take that and you turn it into a show that is expected to be no more deep than that, right? And I think when most people mm-hmm. interacted with it the first time, they figured it'd be kind of a silly comedy, which it can be on some levels, but obviously Ted Lasso, mm-hmm. I think, Marissa, Ted Lasso is almost, and I really liked season two, I want to be very clear about that, but I think that this show took a lot of critique and criticism this year that stemmed from something out of its control, which was the timing of its arrival into our lives. Ted Lasso arrived right in the sweet spot of the pandemic last year, mm-hmm. where everyone was really sick of being stuck at home. You know, mm-hmm. in addition to being literally sick, people were confined, isolated, depressed, like bitter, right? 2020, just awful. Everything happening in the country, awful, divisive, you know, depressing. And here's this ray of sunshine, right? Here's this mm-hmm. dose of sweetness. And here is something with compassion and heart and a real feel good. You talked about that, a feel good show. Is it a feel good show anymore? Well, it was so much of that at such a time that it almost feels like a whirlwind romance. Everyone fell in love with Ted Lasso mm-hmm. the same way at the same time, so to speak. And then here comes season two, and it's like, well, what do you got for us now? And mm-hmm. it's inherent and natural, especially on a startup platform, a place like Apple TV Plus that hadn't really had a hit before Ted Lasso, that really didn't have much of a reason to exist mm-hmm. in terms of like, why do you even subscribe to this before Ted Lasso? Now we can say it does. But so the natural impulse is going to have season two to be bigger and bigger and bigger. And it was 12 episodes instead of 10, but most episodes 45, 48, almost 50 minutes long at times. And I was really thinking to myself, Marissa, is this even a comedy anymore? Or have we drifted over into almost one of those NBC must-see TV kind of areas, you know, like right. ER with Heart or something, you know, like where have we gone with Ted Lasso? And while I still think it's like critically good with some issues that we can poke apart, like, wow, I feel like the pressure on this show to please rescue us, be the feel good thing that's going to rescue us again, that's going to make us feel good again. And it's like, it's almost inherent, isn't it, that it's going to wind up like bloating as a result. And we wind up with like 45 minute dramedies instead of 30 minute tight comedies.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to, you know, what Ted Lasso can be for people. You got the feel good from season one. You really identified with all the characters. And then, you know, I think a lot of people were really, I think, initially turned off with season two, just how it started. But it's a reminder that you can't escape what reality is with entertainment. So you have to face these tough topics, these really important topics that need to be talked about, and, you know, talked about within your friend groups or online or wherever. And, you know, you couldn't really escape it because you were looking for that feel good. You kept wanting to tune in, hoping that it would turn into that, I guess. But it didn't necessarily fulfill the same, in my opinion, from my perspective, the same feelings, like I mentioned. But that to me is a good show because it's like, okay, like, I mean, sometimes I watch trash TV, we've talked about this, and I don't go and like research the people after, like, I don't need to really, it's just escaping into this, you know, whatever world that I'm watching. But when I watch something that's real, that makes me feel an emotion or something about history or a documentary or something, I want to go and Google, I want to like figure out more, like it's an extension of the show. And I think that's what maybe Ted Lasso did for some people. Cause now they're like exploring like, okay, like how did, you know, and we'll get into this, but like the Nate storyline, like you saw the reactions of like how that happened and how, you know, his transformation. But like, for me, I was just like, whoa, like that's deep. Like I wasn't even like really mad at the whole storyline. Cause I was just like, okay, like there's something bigger there going on. And it kind of was a reflection of just us as people, like we do things and we don't necessarily know what the story is behind, you know, but everyone has an opinion about it. Everyone has an opinion about Nate's character. And now hopefully we'll see what that is in season three, you know, about what he went through or why he's the way he is. So oh, my dog is having a drink and she's barking in the background. And,
so is mine, but it's just because someone was coming over to check the air conditioning vent and he refuses to accept any newcomers into the house in any way, shape, or form. So Nate is our villain now. We've had a transformation. And I know Jason Sudeikis said that this was the Empire Strikes Back season of Ted Lasso, and I get it. But, I mean, we've got our Vader now, for sure, in Nate, you know, who I feel, and you know, we're going to kind of transition into what, you know, we liked, what we didn't like from season two, but all, you know, spoiler, this is one of the things I really liked. Because I feel like it's a storyline, Marissa, that they in a calculated fashion built through in the season in steps where most of the steps I think were at least relatable to the character that we knew. It wasn't probably till the last couple of steps that you might in the audience have questioned kind of where Nate's heart was.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's weird because I think last season obviously was really all about Ted, and his story and what he's going through. And then we kind of figure that out at the end, with his divorce. And We didn't really see a lot of the extension of that besides a few episodes with Dr. Sharon. But, you know, we didn't get, in my opinion, get a lot of Ted in this season as a whole. There was a lot of extra people, which is interesting how, you know, they made it for us. Like, it wasn't just another Ted season, you know? So, I don't know. It's, I don't know. Like, one of my thought processes about Nate, and I want to talk a little bit about this is, you know, I talked about how initially I think my reaction was, oh no, he didn't. So, you know, I was expecting, and maybe that's just my expectation of, you know, goodness and humans to, like, you know, him see Ted giving him some grace in, you know, revealing what happened on the field and stuff like that. And then, you know, and then him looking at Ted and kind of realizing, you know what, that was real crappy. That was not good for me to do, and go behind his back. And I thought, I guess I expected, you know, the feel good thing to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
For him to just, you know, go ahead and I think there was a part in the last episode where he said, you know, if anyone wants to, like, oh, I'm ready to tell the truth or something like that. I was like, oh yeah, he's going to tell that he, that he was the one who went to the paper and all, and this anonymous source. But obviously, you know, that threw me for a loop, just in terms of, it wasn't a feel good ending that I thought or was expecting because of what Ted Lasso was to me, at least season one. Yeah. So it's just, it made me look, okay, well, like, now at first I'm like, okay, no, he didn't. And then I was like, I just saw a lot of people's reactions and I was just like, well, this is just a reflection of how, you know, the society is, and like, there's rude people and they do things. And, you know, we all loved Nate season one, you know, we all were like, oh, how cute. Like, we all were supporting him and cheering him on, getting, you know, promotion to coach level and all of that. But then when we don't like something they do for whatever reason, you know, how he grew up, you know, we don't know that. We're just going to tear him down. Let's talk bad about him and let's curse him. And I know it's just a character, but it definitely shows a lot of, like, similarities to how we treat people just in general. Like, he didn't just overnight become a villain. Like, we all loved him last year, and then this year he's good. So, or he's bad. So I don't know. It's just a reflection of society, in my opinion. And I always just try to take a step back when this happens, because I'm like, this is not a real show, yeah. But our reactions to it are really reflective of how we are.
And I think I agree with that, but I think it's also framed mm-hmm. within our expectations for the show. And I kind of returned mm-hmm. to that note, because last year, season one of Ted Lasso felt perfect in many ways. It was like, it was perfectly timed. It landed perfectly. It was exactly mm-hmm. what everybody wanted, and it was right when they needed it. And so there mm-hmm. becomes an expectation that you're always going to be that for me every time. And mm-hmm. under scrutiny, I think there are a lot of little things that you can really poke holes in terms of Ted Lasso season two, in terms of just plot choices. How did they get there? And as you talk through, Nate, like, the more you talk about it and the more I think about it, I feel like they worked really hard to establish the steps that Nate was taking up to being mm-hmm. embittered enough to not only be the source, but then to take it that next step. But mm-hmm. as you talk through it, I kind of tend to agree with you that while everything up to that step, including him outing, you know, going to Trent Crim and being a leaker, mm-hmm. Everything up to that step felt really earned. But that moment where he just completely turns the dial up and says, no, I hate you, you'd never win without me. And then he's upset that the team wins using his strategy. you know, and he's bummed out about that. And then they just yada yada that he gets to be the head coach of a premiership team at the end of the episode, which seems like a whole stepladder of steps that we missed in between, other than just putting up a SpongeBobby 2 months later, you know, like now he's a coach. But again, like, it's a comedy show. It's a nice little show. And I think season two was a very good season of television with a few, you know, little stumbles along the way, but it's being treated like it's the Super Bowl, you know, and as such, everyone's like, well, hang on, and you can do that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can do that, but it's almost, that's where you say it's almost like where you're coming from as you interact with the show. And then I also think it's that the show has been presented as this cure, almost like a cure to how you feel. Like, watch Ted Lasso, you'll feel better. It's like, no, they're trying to explore some dark issues within that. That's gonna be tricky.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. I'm just there's a few people that are close to me that have not watched it yet. So I'm just interested to hear what they have to say, because, you know, obviously I love soccer. I love the feel good. I like, you know, really analyzing how this season goes. But I mean, you're right. It did jump when you said it, like, jumped to, oh, now he's a coach of a Premier League team. Like, that also feels very, like, not realistic, you know, and I think that, you know, so we'll see how that plays out, if they even address it, because, you know, I think the show in general, like, sometimes tackles these really big stories that would be big, and then just kind of like, okay, that's what happened, and that's what it is, and we're like, no, that's not how, like, that would happen in the news, like, there would be something way bigger going on there, so.
Absolutely. Let's kind of talk about what we like, you know, and the things that we really liked about season two of Ted Lasso. And seeing as we've kind of really opened up the Nate box almost completely, you know, I said I enjoyed the storyline. I do think that maybe that last bit toward the end doesn't necessarily feel earned and feels more like words on a page. But in general, I think the performance of Nick Mohammed in this role is one of the better upgrades in terms of acting on the series, because really, if you think about it, Marissa, season one, Nick Mohammed's asked to do physical comedy in terms of stuff as the equipment manager, stuff in his hands, you know, people throwing stuff at him at the laundry bin, et cetera, you know, to fill in on the fringe of scenes, to kind of be that little sweet filler, the fifth person in the scene, able to really just do a couple of things in the show. And now he's actually given this whole arc with the episode with his parents, and to give you that backstory to understand his psyche. And he's being asked to transform as much as his hair transforms from black to a Jose Marino gray by the end. I think he did a great job.
Yeah. And it, you know, he's a character, and towards the end, we're all like, what is going on? And it's believable, which is I think the hardest part, when you are transforming from that, you know, side character and feel good, yay, we love Nate, to whoa, what is going on? And we really have some emotions towards it and towards him. That's a sign of a good actor. And I think he played it really, really well. So, Nate, I don't know. I like him. I still like him in this as a villain. So we'll see how that changes, if it changes, in the next season.
Well, what worked for you the best?
Yeah. I love Roy Kent. I think we talked about this last time too. And I think when we talked about it, and where he was, you know, taking that role as correspondent, on Sky Sports, and then, leaving that, coming back to coach, you know, it was like super supportive of Roy. And then, in that moment, I remember being okay, like, I really like Roy, and I think people were still very attached to, like, Keely and Ted and, you know, those storylines, but I saw glimpses of how great Roy was. So to see how Roy came into his character as well, you know, especially with Roy and Keely and how that all worked out. And he still, in my opinion, was the same person, like with the grunts and the not being able to process emotions or being truthful with how he felt and just like letting it be. I think there's some strong, points, I guess, in terms of how you can deal with things. Like he was just, okay, like this is what it is. And then he just F word. And then this goes along, right? Like, I'm not sure if we're like cussing on here, but
maybe we shouldn't just to counterbalance the Monday podcast in Succession, which is a walking curse word.
So. Okay. Yeah. I'll just say the F word, you know, which is obviously his line, his signature line. And then, you know, just everyone, at least the people that are watching, you know, really just falling for him the way, I guess I felt that was very, very much a fan of the last episode when we talked about it. Yeah, I really liked Roy, this season. And, I think his, he's really good. I don't know if, you've seen any like post Ted Lasso things, but he was like hanging out with Brene Brown, and I love Brene Brown, so I was just like, my worlds are colliding, this is amazing, you know. But you know, that's like his, you know, that's Brett hanging out with as Brett. But Roy and Keely, I think, is you know, pretty a really good storyline. What did you think about Roy this season, or like towards the end of the season too?
I really enjoyed the way that they allowed that character to move out of two dimensionality into showing at least, you know, some depth of personality. And in particular, I thought, and put it on my list of one of my favorite things, the Roy Keely relationship, because I want to make sure we're in the parts that we like. Well, you know, so one of the things that I think is more of almost even an Apple critique as much as a Ted Lasso critique is that in general in their programming, I've seen them try and present kind of an idealized form of society, almost a liberally sanitized version, like saying like, no, this is the good version of the world that we talk about in hopes and dreams. And people will make those decisions based on what our, you know, thoughtful, hopeful paradigm would suggest that they would. And so in some ways, the Roy Keely relationship at first I felt like was being presented to us again as like this idealized relationship. And this is how the perfect man would be with the perfect woman. And they're always perfectly interacting with each other and perfectly forgiving of one another. And it's like, it's just, you know, it's too sanitized. It's too simple.
Right.
You know, and especially for people that are as public as these two characters are, Roy and Keely, you know, each with their own centers of gravity. I liked that they started to lean into that at the end of the year. And while they still did it, making Roy, I mean, Roy is just like the ultimate god, right? Like, you know, he's he's good looking, he's funny, he's gruff, but heart of gold, you know, like there's just nothing wrong with the Roy character. So in that sense, he's idealized, but okay, hanging out in the teacher's room for 3 hours, you know, like, you know, but then confessing it after, again, super idealized. This is not Scenes from a Marriage, you know, but I like that they're heading that direction. I like it when they try and explore what is actually messy and complicated and don't just sanitize it. And I'm really hopeful of that direction with Roy and Keely. I don't think they're going to be together at the end of this series. And I think that's appropriate. And I hope it doesn't end with everybody together happily ever after, just holding up the cup, you know,
Roy and Keely marriage. Yeah, of course that's going to happen. No. That would be too much. It'd be like, of course that's going to happen. There's trouble in the beginning. They start communicating. It's better. Then Keely gets a better job. Roy's feeling inadequate. Then they come back together. And then, oh, but I can't live without you. Yeah, no, that would be too easy, I think, to just come back and happen. But yeah, I think we all wanted, you know, at the last episode, we all wanted, I think, we had expectations of her saying yes to the vacation, you know, because, oh, that's sweet. Like, he's thoughtful and he's going to book this for her, blah, blah, blah. And then her not doing it, I was like, whoa, okay, this is like, she's prioritizing her work, which is, in that moment, that's fine. It's also like, okay, but why is she doing this? Like, is she annoyed with him? Is it like, is her own issues with feeling adequate with maybe, you know, she feels great in terms of her personal relationships, obviously, with Roy and the way he expresses himself, but like her professional, like maybe she doesn't feel that way. And so she feels she has to deep dive into her professional career instead of, you know, she's like, I'm good here. I'm good with Roy. He'll be always there. Right. But
yeah,
it's a lot of different ways that could happen. And I think, you know, I really did like their storyline. It wasn't, I guess, like, it wasn't predictable, so to say. And I think that's the same with almost everything going on in this season. It wasn't the same, you know, and maybe they do this because they know that there is going to be a season three, or like that's the vision. But I think, you know, in general, people watch shows and then they expect that it's going to just end well. And that's, I think, the general thought for a lot of people. So it's interesting to see how that plays out in episodes. And then, you know, we're like sitting here watching these episodes and then critiquing why we're feeling this way. We're like, why do I have these standards? And like, this show's not living up to them. So,
right. Well, you know, it's interesting that this occurs to me as I'm listening to what you're saying, that I think it's really important to note that the creators of Ted Lasso from the beginning have said that they intend a 3-season arc. And when you are pitching this show before at episode zero, so to speak, that's attractive, right? Mm-hmm. When you become the biggest hit that Apple's ever had, it becomes less attractive, right? That you have three seasons, because you'd rather have a Mike Schur level of like 7 or 8 seasons, right? And and that's what I was really thinking about, Marissa, is if Ted Lasso was more like Parks and Rec, which is a show that I think a lot of us tied season one of Ted Lasso to. Look, it's a workplace comedy like Parks and Rec, with quirky characters and a you know, a very similar leads in terms of Amy Poehler to Jason Sudeikis, you know, and the optimism of Leslie Knope to the optimism of Ted Lasso. And so you can make that but at the end of season two of Parks and Rec, everyone's in the same place. You know what I mean? Everyone's still in the office. Rob Lowe hasn't even shown up yet. You know, like, no one's off to run for mayor, and someone else has become the rival, you know, city's director. And you know, but because there's only 3 seasons, there was a lot of character movement on the story arc board over the course of season two. So Roy and Keely, lots of change, all of the, you know, Nate, obviously complete evolution. Those are the two we've talked about. We've got plenty more to talk about, but it's like, there's a ton of change in this season, which is, again, dangerous. It's going to get people riled up, because I think they were maybe expecting that in season 6 of Ted Lasso, just like season 6 of The Office, everyone's still going to be in the office in their same cubicles, in their same spots, with their same problems. That's not the case here, clearly.
Right, exactly. And I've seen a lot of, you know, mentions of that, like, okay, like, is it, you know, you know, we know it's three seasons, and will it continue after that? And will we be satisfied with whatever happens coming up? You know, it's like, feel good. And I think I've seen a lot of this Star Wars relation, parallels, you know, with the three episodes, you know, first. I don't know. I want to talk also about, obviously what didn't work for us, but like another thing that really worked for me was the beginning, you know, the first season, there was a lot of focus on like Jamie Tard, and like, you know, there was a lot of like soccer stuff, I guess, soccer player,
sure,
you know, focus. But I didn't see, and I'm trying to like think about like the whole season as a whole, like there wasn't a lot of the soccer thing, but I don't necessarily blame them, because I feel like it could lose, I guess, its a luster. Like, we don't want to see them always like get the, you know, the win the last match or have the best game or like make the final penalty kick or whatever, you know. I don't, sure, always want to see that, you know, because it's too predictable. That's like every soccer movie or every sports movie. So I do like that it wasn't necessarily always about the soccer, even though that's what brought us to it. Or
yeah,
I just don't know if I would have watched it the same way if it wasn't about initially soccer. Because you and I both love soccer, and I think that's right. What originally, I mean, you know, you see the promos, you see Jason Sudeikis with Rebecca Lowe, obviously huge Rebecca Lowe fan. So it's like something in our world already, like, okay, of course we're going to watch this. So I kind of like that it wasn't that, there wasn't that much going on of that this season.
Okay. That's so I somewhat agree, somewhat disagree, in okay. terms of, I think that there's no question that Ted Lasso is very much only tangentially a show about soccer, right? Soccer mm-hmm. is just the vehicle for the workplace mm-hmm. comedy, workplace dramedy, just as in these other, you know, the Pawnee Parks and Rec Department, or, you mm-hmm. know, what is it, Scranton Mifflin, whatever, Dunder Mifflin, whatever the name is of Dunder Mifflin, you know, the company for The Office, right? Just, you know, mm-hmm. you know, name your setting, right? You know, the White House for Veep, right? You know, mm-hmm. or the West Wing. So, you know, name your setting, and you've got, you know, and then, you know, mix your ingredients within. I did think that they could have done a little more. They could have had a little more, just because mm-hmm. I feel like it would have felt more earned if we had seen Nate be even more tactically important and mm-hmm. have it be more ignored. That only became a couple of beats, and really he wasn't that ignored. It's just he felt that way. Right. And I think that's one of the things that theoretically, given that we had 12 episodes and all this extra time, mm-hmm. could have a couple more matches. You know, like, I also kind of felt like we went from this is a go nowhere super mediocre to we just had one scene of the end of, hey, Sam got a hat trick, and now the team's on a sudden stunning run of form, is how they put it. It's like,
yeah,
sudden and stunning, because we didn't see any of it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. I think, well, it, you know, if you take a look back and you see everything that was covered, all the different storylines, like, it wouldn't have been a 30-minute comedy, you know, season if they had been able to fit in all the extra soccer, or that, you know, expanding on some of the weird timeline, the weird storylines, which I think we'll talk about next, or whatever, you know, the things we didn't like. But yeah, you know, it would have been much longer, and maybe a longer season, or like an hour long show, or, you know, each episode, if they would have looped in more of that. And I mean, I guess there's part of me that's like, okay, that's fine, because I don't want to get bored of watching it, so to say. Like every week I was like, okay, like I only missed one. Like I would wake up at it came out at 11 my time. Uh-huh. So sometimes I'd be asleep, but like 5:30, I'd be like, oh, I didn't get to watch it last night. I'm going to watch it from my iPad in bed. And I would watch it before like I started my day, because I knew that people were going to be talking about it, because they got to watch it at their 9 o'clock and right. They're still going to bed. And I'm like, if I wake up and I see something, I want to know what they're talking about. And, you know, if it was too long, maybe I wouldn't have spent, you know, the 30, 40 minutes in the morning to watch it. I would want to sit down and maybe been a different experience following the storylines and all the things that you were waiting to see how they elaborated when they would bring it up towards the end of each episode. I don't have anything else to say on that.
No, that's cool. Part, I mean, so yeah, I mean, you liked having less soccer. I thought I could add just at least had just a touch more. However, another thing I really liked was, you know, one of our primary storylines here, which is of course Ted and Sharon. And I thought, mm-hmm. Almost all of the Ted and Sharon storyline, a good portion of it, I thought was really good. And in particular, I just think Sarah Niles is a great actor, and mm-hmm. You know, everything she's in, she is so good. She's one, I think, an underappreciated actor, and so to me, she's really the one that's the heavy in those scenes with Jason Sudeikis. Jason is trying to keep up with her, and mm-hmm. I think he did a pretty good job. For the most part, mm-hmm. You know, I think there's again some things in the release of info in that relationship that are a bit sudden or a bit jarring. But you know, I really appreciate the intent, and in particular to center mental health in the sports world as they do toward the end of the season. You know, with the release of the knowledge of his panic attack and that he's going to have to deal with this publicly. You know, I like that because. You know, that's a very important thing that's happening in the sports world. And again, mm-hmm. they present a super idealized version of this in Ted Lasso. They present the best case scenario version of this. Everyone handles it pretty darn well. You know, the only bad thing is he has to see his face on a piece of newspaper in someone's pocket mm-hmm. or in the background of shots. I mean, that's essentially how all the negative press is distilled and presented in the show. So that's maybe the part of it I didn't love the most, but I appreciate the intent and I appreciate the discussion.
Yeah. And I echo that as well. I think also it would, I don't know the timing between the attack and the story. Like, obviously, the episodes wise, I know it, but like, was there any other acceptance, like, from Ted, like, during his sessions with Sarah, where he was accepting that that's what happened, you know, we didn't see a lot of sessions. After, you know, the one major episode, you know, when they were dealing, or two major sessions with her, but like, it was just, you know, is it a reflection of how you get over things or you deal with things, you know, over time, and time heals all, or was it like a 2-week span, which I don't know for sure, because I'd have to go back and listen to like the soccer stuff, because I'm sure they covered it from, you know, but you know, I don't know, like it's just interesting to, you know, glad that they brought it up, glad that it wasn't just Ted potentially going to get some help. I am assuming that this exists in the leagues, especially in the Premier League, you know, that it's not just something that you go and get on your own. So it's good to show that like it's within some clubs. I hope that that's a reflection of reality a little bit, and maybe maybe it's something that's, you know, the leagues can and think about, just to reflect a little bit of the entertainment that this was, and bringing up some of these topics within their workplaces, so to say, you know, having these type of people show up in your workplace and be there, whether it's a soccer club or not, you know, this is something that potentially people can talk about more freely, and not just, I'm going to go see someone and it's outside of work, right? Like, this is something that's not my deal at work, but maybe it is now. So that's really nice to hear, especially in an environment that probably wouldn't talk about it. I mean, very male dominated, you know, sports, it's not something that men talk about. And so, yeah, I'm happy that was there. So,
all right. Last thing, as we maybe transition a little bit, because yeah. I don't know how you feel about this. In a lot of what I've read, the lowest ranked episode of Ted Lasso season 2 was Coach Beard After Dark. And yeah. the Coach Beard bottle episode, essentially, that, you know, picked up from a point in a previous episode and showed us everything that happened from when Ted and Coach Beard split after the 5-0 loss to Man City, mm-hmm. and when they got back together at the mm-hmm. office the next day. 100%, it does almost nothing to advance the plot, other than, I guess, mm-hmm. you know, Coach Beard and Jane. I mean, a little mm-hmm. bit. We get Brendan Hunt with a hula hoop on a dance floor under disco lights, wearing incredibly silly pants. And yeah. this is a gift to our culture and should not be overlooked. This is an important gift to the monoculture. And also, think about the writers of this show, who all have glorious and weird senses of humor. And they've mm-hmm. basically only been able to write in this feel good, like, don't make it too schmaltzy box for so long. This was, to me, like, hey guys, here's an episode, let your freak flag fly, go ahead, yeah. let's get weird, let's get silly, let's get surreal, and you've got an actor that can handle this and mm-hmm. that can be the star of this episode and can be fun and funny and dangerous and in danger and all of these things all in the same episode. And so I loved the Coach Beard bottle episode. I'd rank it toward the top of my ranking for the season. And I think a lot of people are the exact opposite.
Yeah, I'm at the opposite. I hear you about, you know, letting your freak flag fly, like, you know, be who you are. I just didn't see how it fit with, like, the rest of the very, I think, deep storylines that happened. And you know, maybe it was just, okay, we're reminding you, like, this is a feel good show, like, everyone's cool. But it just didn't, I mean, he played it well, really good acting. You know, I did laugh. I was just like, WTF the whole time, like, what's going on? I don't get how this meshes with, like, you know, I think, you know, that was right in the thick of Sam and Rebecca's storyline and stuff like that. So it was just like, I didn't get it. I don't hate it, but I wouldn't definitely rank it towards the top for that. But I love the pants, and Coach Beard is an Arsenal fan, so can't really hate on him too much. Brendan is, actually, not Coach Beard. Yes. Brendan.
LAFC fan too. I don't know if that is, if that's okay for you.
Beat LA every time, it all day.
Yeah, fair enough. let's transition a little bit then, and you just helped open the box in terms of things mm-hmm. that didn't really work for you in season 2 of Ted Lasso. And at the top of the list, and I know you and I talked about it last time, as it resolved or didn't resolve to the end of season 2, I feel even more strongly about this. My position is solidified. Sam and Rebecca doesn't work for me. It doesn't work for me in any way, shape, or form. I don't buy it. I don't buy that they're attracted to each other. I don't buy that they have chemistry. It felt forced the entire way. And it is the of a show that when it struggles for me, it struggles in areas of realism. And like, are you really going to be in this venue and then just pretend things are this way? This is number one on the list with a bullet. The owner of a Prem League or even Championship League team dating the team's mid, like give me a break.
Not realistic at all. You're right. I didn't see any, I mean, and maybe this is a Rebecca storyline that maybe comes out in the season, you know, about her, you know, her downfall with Rupert. And now, you know, she's getting attention from Sam, and Sam is just, you know, this kid that, you know, has this hot boss and they're into each other, or, you know, I don't know, but it just, cringe worthy. Even towards the end where Sam, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched it, and if you're listening this far and you haven't watched it, sorry, I don't even need to say that. I shouldn't have to. But where, you know, where he says he's staying with the club, and Rebecca's like looking at him like in her head, like I could see the thoughts like, oh, are you staying because of me? Because I'm here. And I was just like, no, like it has nothing to do with you, Rebecca. Like, and it was just cringe. And, you know, as much as they tried to, okay, like it's done. We like kissed and that's all. And we just see each other and we glance at each other. No, like, no. Just didn't work for me at all. So,
you know what really, really disappointed me is the last two episode fake, because they bring in the Nigerian billionaire played by Sam Richardson, who I love. I absolutely love Sam Richardson. He is so damn funny, and he changes physically for every role. You know, he's so different. And this time, I mean, he just embodied that. I'm like, oh God, it's Sam Richardson. Oh, I'm so happy. As soon as he came out of that helicopter, I was just like so happy. And right away, I got to be honest, Marissa, right away, my mind started like making connections and clipping wires into spots, like the challenge to detonate the bomb. And
yes,
I was like, okay, oh, wow. I all of a sudden, I just wrote them a check of credit. I was like, good for you, Ted Lasso staff. You've come up with a scenario by which Rebecca can recognize her situation. She's supposed to be a power player. She is a female executive in a male-dominated world who is strong and powerful. But it really bothered me that when she was called a boss-ass bitch, it was for falling for her 30-year younger midfielder. Like, that isn't a boss-ass bitch move. What would be a boss-ass bitch move is to recognize that and transfer that kid, get all the money, use that money to make your team better as you go into the Prem, and simultaneously end a problem in your life that's a social issue that's going to become a business issue. And this might be because I'm coming out of a big long Succession rewatch, and I'm in Succession mode, but I'm like, 100% that's how it would have been handled on Succession. You know, I'm watching Survivor, right? We're in the middle of Survivor. 100% that's how you handle it on Survivor. You know, like you cut it loose and you make them, and it's like, instead she becomes this, you know, whimpering on this porch. I don't know what to say, you know, like just it weakened her character to me in a great way. And it in a way that's not great. Let me put it that way. It weakened her character in a strong way that was not great. And I just was like, come on, you guys had the way to make this sharp. And instead, I really feel like it was kind of mushy.
Yeah, you make a good point, because, you know, that boss ass bitch stuff like doesn't happen when, you know, you're you're falling over, you know, being a boss, but like falling for one of your players and sneaking and, you know, doing all that. I'm like so annoyed with Rebecca right now. Like after you talked about, I don't know. We'll see, I guess, for the next, because I really liked her in season one, obviously her relationship with Keeley. And I think that definitely happened, towards the beginning of this season, but maybe her confidence was really relied in like how others see her, like males, so to say, not necessarily Rebecca or Keeley, because mm-hmm. Keeley was super supportive, and they talked, you know, business stuff, obviously girl talk and stuff like that, but like I could see parallels between them too, Keeley and Rebecca, especially early on season two. So yeah, Sam and Rebecca, no, not gonna be cool with that at all. Like, no. Mm-mm.
Yeah. And then, cringy. You know, it really is. And I guess the other, because we talked about the soccer and it's fun. We talked about the soccer. We talked about the Coach Beard episode. I think those were on each of our lists, just on different sides. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Kind of the only last thing in our previous episode, we talked through the episode where they did the corporate sponsor boycott. Yeah. And then, you know, a startup internet company, like a startup app replaces a giant airline as the front of kit sponsor. And we're supposed to assume that the money just didn't drop off a cliff there, which is just patently ridiculous. But I do think, like, if you're gonna play in the sports realm and you're gonna kind of bump into these stories and topics, like treating them realistically is there's much more to mine there than doing it in a schmaltzy, feel good Apple TV Plus idealized society. We live in the world that we dream of, not the world that we live in. This comes back to that overarching critique, because again, this would have been the scandal of all scandals. Mm-hmm. And there's media, there's opposition media everywhere, including the UK, and right-wing media would have been destroying this club on AFC Richmond on a everyday basis, would have been destroying Sam on an everyday basis. If you think Kaepernick had it tough, Sam would have had it tougher, you know, and especially in that culture. And it's just completely ignored in the show. Mm-hmm. It's literally completely ignored. And instead he is thought of as being this wonderful inspirational person. And he's admired for his stances. Meanwhile, he's sleeping with the owner. I mean, like, that's not admirable in any way, shape, or form. It's truly not. And to be portrayed as like this great positive is kind of ridiculous. And I'll just throw into this same bucket of things that are sportsy things that are just ridiculous. The whole Trent Crim situation. I mean, you know, I would have said it's utterly ridiculous. And then Adam Schefter's email from 2011 popped on the transom yesterday. Dear Mr. Editor, owner of a team, would you like to make any changes to my story? But I mean, wasn't this even worse? What Trent Crim is the worst journalist ever.
You're talking about two things, like corporate sponsor, like all of that, the huge story.
I know I threw a lot in there. It's all under the unrealistic soccer thing bucket for me.
You know, I don't know if we're going to touch on this, but like, I mean, I think, you know, before we touch on the crossover to the something that happened in real life about corporate sponsor, we wanted like the soccer stuff, or you want more soccer stuff. I was really into like the stories, but then when you talk about like the business of sports, like media relations and corporate sponsorships, this point that I was making, like it didn't elaborate enough. Like it didn't, that storyline didn't come through enough. So it was unrealistic. And when you want more soccer stuff, like that's what I was looking for more, not necessarily just on the pitch play soccer stuff. But yeah, the crossover, are they NWSL or NWSL? One of the teams had in out of Portland, Portland Thorns had crossed like to put tape over their sponsor social CBD. And I tried to Google some stories about the, you know, about what happened, because I saw it late last night, obviously late Wednesday night. So I wasn't able to, you know, get to that this morning, but yeah, I don't know if this is going to be the same reaction that like potentially happens with Ted Lasso. We're like, oh, that happened. Like, okay. Like, let's not even think about it. It's just a little blurb on our Twitter timeline and that's it. But I think it needs to be a bigger discussion, because, you know, you Google some things about this company and it's not good. There's some, you know, some allegations there of sexual misconduct or, you know, just bad behavior from the, you know, I don't know, this is alleged. I'm just trying to find the stories, and I didn't get enough time to research, but if that is the case, and that's the reason why they blocked it out, like this is going to be a bigger story, almost on the level of what recently happened with the NWSL a couple weeks ago, with, you know, a couple coaches getting fired and them stopping play and all of that. So, but I have never seen it happen in any instance of any team, you know, yeah, in real soccer happening. So did Ted Lasso influence, like, did what happened on Ted Lasso influence the actions of these few women that are on this NWSL team and do that? I mean, because have you seen that before, like for a team to do that? So
I mean, yeah, it's extraordinarily rare that you see anyone mm-hmm. speak out against any sponsor. Now, I think there's kind of, I have two reactions, one of which is like, that is cool. And yes, maybe that was inspired. Did those, you know, young women watch Ted Lasso, see that, hear the story about their bad sponsor, and thus have the inspiration to use tape to cover it up? Or was that just an instinct that is natural? What, how else would you cover it up? Great question. Would love to hear their, you know, love to hear that question posed to some of the athletes who covered the sponsor in tape. However, we are talking about social CBD, which sounds like something you could pick up at a dispensary, and that doesn't relate to, you know, like whatever, you know, the Dubai Airlines, mm-hmm. you know, which is right. like, you know, billion dollar company with, you know, $100 million sponsorship. That was probably a several thousand dollar sponsorship. You know, it might've been a $100,000 sponsorship on their kit, not $100 million sponsorship. Right. And then that matters, right? The numbers matter, but, and that's why they won't, you know, plus just within the framework of that, folks who follow professional women's soccer in the United States are going to be generally in a more anti-corporate liberal slant than those who follow English Premier League soccer in the UK, you know, and, you know, those are kind of the differentiators that it's like, it's a very American way of looking at something that's happening in a different country. And we're really framing it in American ways that I wonder if people, when they see those things in the UK, think that we're being really, really quaint with what we're doing.
I a few of my friends in the UK have not seen Ted Lasso, which is interesting, because I'm like, what, why not, like this is crazy, like of course you should be watching it. Yeah, I don't know what their opinion on it. I don't know if you've heard from anyone over there about this particular aspect of Ted Lasso, but corporate sponsorship, that's a huge thing, what we're all striving for, right? Don't you want to get this podcast sponsored by corporate right? thousands of dollars? And just,
well, I mean, you know, but, even the little soccer team I work for, right? We've got a major medical corporation that it feels like it that way sometimes. We've got a major medical corporation that's on the front of our kit, you know, Kaiser Permanente. And I mean, you know, they're clearly unimpeachable, right? But I mean, if something happened and I don't know, you know, and then all of a sudden our team walked out with tape over, I mean, that'd be a big problem. That'd be a big problem for the finances of our club. Like,
Well, even like Loyal,
right? You know, absolutely. If loyal walked fans. Out and said, if every Loyal player walked out and said no more Stone or no more whoever, Rocket League on the back, you know, just like X'd out all the sponsors, you know, Mr. Vasiliadis is going to have a harder time making payroll next week. And that's the payroll you guys are counting on, you know, and that should have been the same thing with Rebecca. Rebecca should have been petrified seeing money evaporating in front of her eyes. And instead it was tinkly feel good music and swell the chorus and everyone's hearts puff up and they get, you know, they get that knowing smile and everyone's so proud of the team for what they did. And it's like, bullshit, you would have been getting your ass handed to you. And you're the one who cuts the checks, you know? It's like, why do we have to pretend like that doesn't exist in the world you're creating? I guess, but in this way, Marissa, we've managed to knock out all of the things I had written below what didn't work in terms of general questions, because I think we've explored. Did Ted Lasso get too big for its own good? I think yes. I think yes. I think this show got too big for its own good in the sense that the expectations grew so much. They have to put in content to fill those expectations. And to me, this is still a really good show, but it's not going to be a top five zeitgeist in the exact same way, because it's really trying to fulfill a corporate god and a story god and a soccer god and an audience that's saying, fill my heart and fix what's wrong with me with your little TV show. I mean, that seems kind of impossible.
Fill my heart and fix what's wrong with me in 40 minutes each week. Yeah, sure. Not going to happen. No, it's a good way to sum up what, you know, all of the feelings of what Ted Lasso is to us as an entertainment source, but also as a reflection of society and how we can take these conversations that have happened or these things that are happening and, you know, really look, okay, like mental health, okay, like, yeah, these forbidden relationships or these relationships that don't work, that are toxic, you know, even Coach Beard and his girlfriend, what's his girlfriend's name? Jane?
Jane, yeah, Jane.
Yeah, I was just like, oh no, like toxic, no, don't like that. So yeah, it's just, I mean, in that sense, I feel like it's a great show because it does not just check off the okay, feel good, great. Like it does force you to really look at, you know, how you're reacting, and then as you're communicating with other friends and other people online about it, like everyone has a different reaction to the storylines, and there's a lot of them in this season specifically, and a lot more drilled down outside of just Ted from last season.
The creation of Ted Lasso now really makes me believe, Marissa, that there is a space.
Believe. Did you just say believe?
And I have not torn it in half and left it on my desk either. This is a belief that remains whole and doesn't have any it doesn't have any scotch tape in the middle of it. This show has shown the path for a gritty drama about soccer that could still be funny in a Succession style way, but could actually take all these issues that they're nodding at on Ted Lasso and actually get into the mire and the muck of it. And there could be some incredible stuff in there. And I'd be happy to watch that show if the right people got involved and the right script got created. You know, as such, like the last two things I had put on the bullet points, which were, would Ted Lasso have served itself better with a different release model? I don't think there's any going back. This is the number one show for Apple. So they're going to release it week by week. So it's a moot point. And along with the next one I wrote down, which is, should the editing tighten up again to get back to 30 minute shows? I think it would be well served to do so. I truly firmly believe that there is a quality to be gained from the European model of a 6-episode series where no episode goes over 25 minutes and then telling the story within that framework and making the editorial choices that force you to show and not tell and to do things that don't kind of hit you over the head with it. But again, there's no going back. This is this is what Ted Lasso is. This is what it's grown into. It's just going to grow from here. So I do think what I'm trying to find more is just my happy medium as a consumer. You know what I mean? To just take it for what I think it was originally intended to be, more than what it's morphed into in this, you know, gigantic thing that it's become in the populace.
Yeah. And I mean, I can't make a decision on what that would be without seeing this next season, you know, in terms of my feeling. You obviously watch a lot of series and, you know, different storylines and all that. But so far, my feeling is that, you know, it served its purpose. Maybe it didn't touch on a lot of things that I wanted it to, or elaborate. It elaborated on a lot of different little storylines, like I said, but there are certain things that just didn't make sense to me. And I don't know if they will touch on that again. I think, you know, season three, I think we need to see more of Coach Beard. And hopefully we'll get that, because he's a weirdo. And I like it. you know, and he's just, you know, I don't think he's gotten as much focus in the last two seasons. So hopefully they'll show more of him. But you know, so far I love it. Like I have a little Believe thing on my wall, 'cause it's like something that I like. I love seeing it. And you know, I think it's just, we'll wait and see. And I think that's when I'll make my decision about, could it have done more soccer? Did it just gloss over some of these tough topics? You know, maybe they're, hopefully, I don't know if they finished writing it yet or if they filmed it.
I think it's done being written, but I'm sure they have not filmed it yet.
I'm wondering if they're seeing any of, or hearing maybe podcasts like this that like talk about how certain things just aren't realistic. And I don't know how big of a soccer fan these writers are, because I don't know if they need to have more soccer, but they just need to make it a little bit more realistic on some of the things that just don't make sense, you know. And then hopefully Rebecca can turn her character around, because I think, you know, she's probably top letdown of this season. You know, compared to last season of how she was. So,
well, incredible conversation on Ted Lasso. And I appreciate it, Marissa. As we wrap up here on the podcast today, couple thoughts on so far this season of The Challenge. It's gotten pretty not so good reviews. For the most part this season, I think a lot, I mean, I've been, you know, listening to some of the podcasts, some of the back chatter about it. And maybe that's been because of the like kind of monotone predictability of that rookie alliance, you know, anti-rookie alliance, the veterans alliance in the beginning. So it was just like, come watch The Challenge and watch two rookies, you know, or four rookies compete in the lair at the end. I think now with the last two episodes, we're at least finally starting to see the wheel turn the way that you would expect to have seen it turn since episode one.
Did you see last night's episode yet?
I have not been able to finish it. I do know based on social.
I don't know if this happened as a result of the rookie vet, like the vet alliance against the rookies, or if they had this planned in terms of how they change the challenges and how, you know, how that, because I've heard that they've done that before in previous seasons where like things are happening based on like people figure out the game and then it makes it uninteresting. And I imagine they would be able to do that, you know, on the fly, because they're not like, they're not these sets. They have the games planned, but I don't know if they have the sets and the game and the rules planned. Last night got so more interesting than the past couple of episodes where it was just, okay, vets versus rookies. Okay. Like cool. Rookie. And like you said, that was boring, but you know, and there wasn't a lot of storylines to really follow outside of that. It was just, you know, boring in my opinion, like no like side storylines to really follow. Because it was just, you know, this committed veterans against rookies. This last episode, like I was just like, yeah, cool. Like, here we go. This is the challenge. Yeah. Cause, you know, definitely, switched it up a lot. And yeah, I don't even know how many more episodes there are, but, it'll be interesting to see what happens after, you know, and I don't know if I can give a spoiler because you haven't watched it, but you've heard about it.
Yeah.
Like the team structure changes. And so I'm wondering if the team structure will change
again
after this next challenge. Yeah. Right.
In other words, is this a permanent twist or is this one of many?
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I'm glad. I'm just in short, switch something up, because honestly, I think I watched the first 6 or 7 episodes just out of rote. Like, well, it's the challenge and it's new and I'm watching it. And then like, I kind of stop at some point and look back and go, none of this was particularly that good. I mean, there's a real monotony of the actual challenges. So many of them are just go get the thing and put, and then do a puzzle and then something blows up, you know, and they've really survivored it up a little bit in that way, you know what I mean, in terms of they've always got that two stage with physical then puzzle, which I get, and it's an equalizer and it keeps the Ashleys and the Nannies in the game, you know, I mean, maybe not always, but in general in general, all right, I know I might have picked a name right there out of a hat, but you know, it can keep a female player in the game, so it's not just the brawn of CT or Johnny Bananas or someone that's going to win it every single time.
I miss Johnny Bananas as much as I didn't like him. I missed him on the show.
I'm sure he'll be back soon. He's podcasting about the show now on the Ringer Network. So he sounds like he's itching to get back into the game at least a little bit, because he's ragging on everything that's happening.
I mean, you
need those guys, but you do also need this transition. So I'm glad that whether it's a Josh or a Fessy, you know, Devin, Kyle, like there's that second class, so to speak, of vets. Like I would like to see it where it's not just that CT wins again. Having said that,
even though I like CT,
I actually would be happy for CT if he won again. Like just go ahead and win every season you're on. But like at some point, like that's not good for MTV if that's going to be the result time. So it would be nice to see some stuff get shaken up a little bit and to kind of have that new class of established come in, so that we don't always have to have either CT or Johnny or Derek K, you know, like kind of like those classic, or Darrell, like, you know, like these classic old school. That's to me what now Challenge All-Stars should be for. Right. To some extent.
Yeah, we'll see when CT actually retires from the regular one and go to the All-Stars, because he would kill it on the All-Stars.
He would destroy All-Stars.
yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's a new season of All-Stars coming November 11th.
I know, and I saw the cast, and if you put CT in it, it's no contest. everyone else is fighting for second. So there's no contest.
I'll have to come back and talk about the challenge and a new Real World Homecoming. So I love that stuff. So Yeah, my cup is full with you know, now that Ted Lasso's over, I'm like, okay, yeah, I do want season three to start, but I've got other shows to, plus the holiday season coming up, you know, so I'm like, I don't
Well,
need to
you're
do all
absolutely
that.
right. So let's just tentatively, you know, think about it for about a month from now for a segment.
Okay.
We'll probably won't do the whole pod on it, but we'll do a segment on as when the challenge wraps up, you know, when we get to the end of season 37. And by that point, we'll be into All Stars, which to me is just fun. All Stars is just fun. It's silly fun for the most part, but you know, but the real season, the real stuff, we'll get into it. We'll do our own reunion show. Here when things are done.
Nice.
Cool. So real quick, as we get ready and we wrap up the show, normally I do a more robust recommendation segment. I feel like I've been in the middle of so many things. So what I really want to do is just a little bit of a quick reset on what's happening on the feed and then what's about to happen next week on the feed. So we have gone now to twice a week production for the next 10 weeks. So we're ramping up. It's going to get us to episode 200 a lot faster than we intended. But that is because now every Monday night, you'll be able to check out our Succession season 3 spinoff podcast, Full Effing Beast. We say the word over there. Okay. I've kept this one without the explicit tab. And that is myself, along with Bo Linet, who's been our Succession correspondent here on Crossing Streams, but with Justice Parman, the LA young filmmaker, film writer, who's really bringing a great cinematic eye to the work that Jesse Armstrong's crew is doing on Succession, and also Corey Stewart, who is basically the Roman Roy of our group. So we are going to be together, you know, new episodes coming out with the season premiere this coming Sunday. And on Monday evenings, we'll be recording Full Effing Beast. So you can look for that around dinner time on Monday, most everywhere on this feed. And then next week on Thursday, on episode 146 of Crossing Streams, I'm really excited about this. The guest that I'm going to have on this week, next week, Marissa, because I'm a big fan, as you know, you're a big reality fan. I'm a big reality fan. And as a result, I'm a fan of the podcast platform Rob Has a Podcast, which is generally Survivor, Big Brother theme, but they, you know, they talk challenge and they do a whole lot of stuff. And a new podcast on RHAP is called Nothing But Netflix. And next week we're going to have on as a guest here on Crossing Streams, one of the two hosts of Nothing But Netflix, Chappelle. And Chappelle, I absolutely love. I've listened to him on 20 different podcasts. I love every single time he's been on. And we are going to be on to talk about a show I put in the recommendation segment a couple of weeks ago before I had finished it, Midnight Mass. And I never, I think, have put on this show what I thought in the end of Midnight Mass. And I absolutely loved Midnight Mass. It is my favorite Mike Flanagan of his three horror series that he's put on Netflix, his three limited series. It's number one by a mile. And I thought the other two were good to very good. Midnight Mass is terrific. And it is the best finish to a slow starting show that I've seen in a very, very long time. Seven episodes, and you really need to get through the third episode before it all has clicked in. And then you're like, oh, that's what this is. And then once you realize what it is, then you're like, holy shit, this is one of the, oh no, I did it. holy cow. This is one of the best shows that I've seen in a long time. So Chappelle and I will be on, and we'll find out everything that's happening on Nothing But Netflix, his podcast. And we're going to talk about Midnight Mass on our regular Crossing Streams episode, number 146, next week. So Succession on Monday night, and we'll be talking Midnight Mass on Thursday, and I'll get a chance to talk with Chappelle, and I guarantee you that we'll do some laughs about Survivor 41 on that podcast as well. So Marissa, thank you as always for your time. Thank you for listening to my layout. Where can everyone see, you know, catch up with you, follow you, tell everyone what's next up for you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at hashtag Marissa. So you have to spell that out, hashtag Marissa. I'm also co-host for Fairweather Podcast that highlights the San Diego Loyal outside of San Diego. And we have three hosts, all in three different locations. And the season is wrapping up for, you know, well, with the potential of playoffs. So we'll go through the end of the season whenever that ends. But you know, it's, yeah, we go live, every week when we can. I'm not always on it because of time zones and all of that stuff, but, definitely go and support Fairweather Podcast. We are on YouTube and Twitter. You can find us there.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank at Fairweather Pod, I believe on Twitter.
It's at Fair underscore pod, but you can get that from my, Twitter bio too. So hashtag
that's Marissa. True. At hashtag Marissa. And of course you can follow me on Twitter at 619 sports, even though this is not a sports podcast. Occasionally I make sports jokes and then I'm reminded by my panel that I'm on the wrong pod. I go, oh yeah. But so for Marissa Cali, I'm Craig Elston. Thanks to everyone for getting to the end of this episode 145 as a little favor to us, as a thanks for being here, for making it to the end. Would you mind so badly just taking that thumb of yours on the phone that you're currently holding in your hand and just scrolling down right there to where they've got those stars and hitting that five right there, hitting that five star. And, you know, there's a little box right under that. And if you wanted to write a nice little review, that only helps the cause, you know, those five stars and those reviews, it actually does add up. Apple does pay attention. It does affect the algorithm. It does affect how it releases it and to whom the podcasts are exposed. So if you could do that, we'd love you even greater. Marissa, have a great time. Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
I know that today's a big day. You gave us some time on a big day. So we really appreciate that. And we'll talk to you when challenge wraps up, eh?
Yes, sounds good. Thank you for your time, Craig. I appreciate it.
For Marissa Cali, I'm Craig Elston. Thanks to you for your time. And we'll talk to you on Monday right here on the Crossing Streams feed. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye-bye.